First lesson is taken from Isaiah. And in this, the passage implies that people did not fast with the right heart and did it only as an empty ritual. They fasted for selfish needs. The people fasted to glorify themselves. Isaiah isn't down on fasting, but on any religious ritual. The Lord does not desire fasting, but kindness and justice. Reading from Isaiah chapter 58, verses 3 to 7. Why do we fast, but you do not see? Why humble ourselves, but you do not notice? Look, you serve your own interest on your fast day and oppress all your workers. Look, you fast only to quarrel and to fight and to strike with a wicked fist. Such fasting as you do today will not make your voice heard on high. Is such the fast that I choose, a day to humble oneself? Is it to bow down the head like a bulrush and to lie in sackcloth and ashes? Will you call this a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the fast that I choose, to loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them, and not to hide yourself from your own kin. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Second lesson is taken from the book of Matthew. And in this, it says, giving alms was considered by Judaism to be the foremost act of piety or praise of others. When we take least notice of our good deeds ourselves, God takes the most notice of them. Likewise, Jesus is warning against hypocrisy, an outward show of religious duties. He's talking about the way to pray as well as the results of prayer. So reading from Matthew 6, verses 1 to 8. Beware of practicing your piety before others in order to be seen by them, for then you have no reward from your Father in heaven. So whenever you give alms, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, so that they may be praised by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But when you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your alms may be done in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And whenever you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners so that they may be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But whenever you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. When you are praying, do not heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do, for they think that they will be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. We're not quite picking up where this passage left off. We're leaving out the Lord's Prayer that Jesus taught at this time in the sermon. But we'll look at that next Sunday. But we are picking up at verse 16 through 21. And whenever you fast, do not look dismal like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces so to show others that they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But when you fast, put on oil on your head and wash your face so that your fasting may be seen not by others, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust consume and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust consumes and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
I think we all want to be looked upon highly by others. You know, we want to make a good impression. We want people to think we're good, decent, wonderful people. And often we do things for show so that people might think that of us. And that's what Jesus is getting at here in this portion of the Sermon on the Mount. But he's talking about people who use their spirituality as a means of trying to impress people. And he uses three spiritual practices that were common in that day. Giving alms to the poor, praying, and fasting. And he tends to take them to extremes. He exaggerates a little bit on these things to make his point. For instance, with the giving of alms to the poor, they didn't go around blowing a trumpet and kind of having a parade as someone would go and give money to someone who's poor, but they did somehow make it known that they were doing such things. You know, they wanted people to know just how generous they were. And so they would find those ways to make it known. Today, in our world, in our society, those that are rich, especially those that are rich, when they give large sums of money, they have buildings named after them, or their names are put very prominently in the organization's literature, or they hold ceremonies to recognize someone's benevolence. And that's just the way the world works. And people want to be acknowledged for what they're doing. We in the church aren't that different. You know, when we give of our time and our talents and our treasures, we want to be appreciated too. But what Jesus is getting at is, what is our motive for doing these things? If our motive is only to be seen by others so they'll think how wonderfully spiritually we are, well, then we're missing the point. If we give for the glory of God, if we give for the purposes of God, of our time and our talents and our treasures, then we'll be rewarded by God. And this is what Jesus is hammering throughout this, what we read, that if we want to be seen by others, well, then that's going to be your reward. But if you're doing it for the right motives, the right reasons, then the reward you get, it comes from God. We see this again with the prayer. Jesus talks about prayer in three different ways, and we didn't read the one about the Lord's Prayer. We'll look at that next week. But he talks about people who pray in public and give these wonderful, elaborate prayers. Just the beautiful words, and it all flows together so wonderfully, and people look at them and say, wow. How spiritual is that person? Whew, I could never do that. And so they don't. But often those that pray that way, perhaps it's because they are trying to impress you, trying to show just how wonderful they are and how spiritual they are and how spiritually mature they are. And don't you wish you were like me? I like to encourage people to pray out loud in public. And what I tell people is, remember, prayer is just talking to God. You don't need fancy words or elaborate words. You don't need the these and the thous and the King James English. You can use that if you want, but you don't have to. I just say it's talking with God like you're talking with somebody else, a person. And you let known what's on your heart. And we pray in this manner, and it may not be fancy or elaborate or big words, but it's sincere. And these are the prayers that God hears. Then there are those that Jesus compares to the Gentiles who use these long prayers, many words, because they believe God hears the many words. And Jesus says, that's not what matters. God knows your needs even before you ask. So just get to the point. My favorite prayer, or one of my favorite prayers in the whole Bible, is Peter. You know the story when Jesus comes walking on the water and Peter says, "If that's you, Jesus, let me come out and join you." And he says, "Come on out." And Peter climbs out of the boat and he's walking on the water and the wind's blowing and the waves kind of hit across his legs and he takes his eyes off of Jesus and poof, he's in the water. And he offers up this prayer. "Oh Jesus, the Christ, the anointed one, you who love all in the world, you who have come to save all in the world, might you look on mercy upon me now and lift out your hand and pull me up and rescue me from the depths of this water." No, that's not how he prayed. He said, "Lord, save me." Direct to the point. And Jesus reached out and pulled him up. God knows what we need before we ask. You're not going to impress God with your fancy words or your long prayers, but with the sincerity of your heart. And if you're looking to impress others, then that's all the reward you get. If you're looking to interact with God, then that's the reward you'll have. Then there's the fasting. We don't tend to fast much these days. Lent's coming up, and that's if you're going to fast, that's usually the time you might do so. And fasting is a good spiritual discipline because it's us giving up something that is important to us or something that we like, and instead devoting that time that we might be doing whatever that is that we're fasting from to spend it with God. So it's good. Now, people, Jesus was saying, tend to dress up for the occasion. Don't comb your hair, you know, put some ashes on you or something, you know, let it be known, one, you know, walk kind of hunched over, like, "Oh, my stomach." You know, you let everyone know that you're fasting so that they might say, "Oh, how spiritual is he or she that they would fast like this, that they would look so bad because of their fasting." Jesus says, "No, don't do it that way. Wash your face. Put on a fresh set of clothes. Walk around tall, upright. Don't let anyone know you're fasting. Then you'll be rewarded by your Father in heaven." We read from Isaiah about what God would see as a true fast. It's not the giving up of food, but it's loosening the bonds of injustice. It's caring for the poor. It's actions. That's what it's about. So Jesus has shown us these three spiritual practices and says, don't do that before others to be seen by them, but do it in secret so God might reward you. Now, if we left it there, I suspect all of you would say, "Well, nice, that doesn't really apply to me. I don't tend to pray very much in public. I don't tend to make my gifts known, what I'm giving away, and I don't fast, so I'm off the hook." But there are other ways that we use our piety to try to impress others. We come to church on Sundays. We put on a big smile. We appear, everything's all together. People ask, "How are you?" "Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?" And yet, there are times when our worlds are falling apart. Perhaps there's health issues or financial issues or family issues that are just tearing you apart. There may be worry, anxiety. There may be doubts and fears, whatever it is, but there's things that are tearing you up inside. But you come to church with a smile on your face, and everything's good. And we miss out on the grace that we might find, that we might discover in this place. When I was in college, I was part of a Christian fellowship that met at Dr. and Mrs. Owen's house. They lived a couple of blocks away from the campus. And there'd be about 100 of us that would gather on Sunday evenings, and we'd squeeze into their living room and their dining room, and we would sing hymns together, and we would sing what at that time was contemporary Christian music. It's not very contemporary today. And we would have someone do a Bible study, kind of like a sermon. For many of us, it was church. Even if we went to church somewhere on Sunday mornings, this Sunday evening service was our church. And it was very meaningful to many of us. Well, about 10 years after I graduated from college, we had a reunion, an Owens reunion. By this time, Dr. Owens had been dead, but his wife was still alive, and she was there. And I don't know, 25, 30 of us gathered. We were at a state park. And it was great seeing everybody. I hadn't seen them in 10 years, many of them. I was going through a dark period in my life at this time. I graduated from seminary. I'd moved to Atlanta to serve the Lord. And the job I was doing, working at a Christian social agency, fell apart. And I'm out. I lose that job. I'm now working at a company putting decals on truck trailers. Me with my master's degree, working alongside a high school dropout, and just feeling bad about myself. And had no clue as to what God had in store for me. I had very few people that I could walk with that would share this burden with me. And it was the beginning of what I called my wilderness experience that lasted about 6 years. And so I'm here. And we're sitting in a room, and people are sharing what's going on in their lives for the last 10 years. You know, they talk about who they marry, they talk about their kids, and it's all smiley and happy, and they get to me, and my world's falling apart. And I start to share that. And it changed the whole mood in the place. And others started to share some of their hurts and some of their problems and their issues. And it became a real moment of grace where we weren't putting on false airs of what's going on in our lives, but we're getting down to what's really true, the nitty-gritty. Now, there were some there that didn't really appreciate this because they had the belief that, you know, when you're a Christian, everything's rosy and everything works out good. So why are you bringing up these problems? But for those of us who shared, those of us who became vulnerable, it was a moment of grace and a healing that we would have missed out on if we had not shared the reality of our lives. We want to impress people. We want people to think highly of us. And because of that, we allow others to dictate how we view ourselves. And this can be destructive. And this can take us to bad places. Let me tell you about Margaret. For 40 years, Margaret carried the worst day of her life with her. It affected everything in her life. But you go back 40 years, Margaret was in a one-room schoolhouse with 25 other students. Miss Gardner was the teacher. She was a bitter and harsh woman. She and Margaret had never gotten along from the very beginning. And Margaret remembers this day as if it happened yesterday. It was when she was 9 years old. And she was hurrying, trying to get back to the classroom after recess. But once again, she got in the room late. And Miss Garner said, "Margaret, you're late again. Why? You're holding up all we're trying to do in class. You're a bad girl. Class, Margaret's a bad girl. She is hurting you because she is so selfish. And we need to punish Margaret. Perhaps if we punish her, she'll become good. So we need to teach her a lesson. I want each student to come to the blackboard and write something bad about Margaret." And so each student, all 25 of them, went up to the blackboard. "Margaret is stupid. Margaret is ugly. Margaret is fat. Margaret is a dummy." And on it went. 25 bad things that were indelibly written on Margaret's soul. And she went home that night and she tried to cry her pain away, but it wouldn't go away. 40 years she carried this until she finally started to see a therapist. And there was that time she's sitting in the waiting room waiting to see the counselor. And she was shocked as she realized she had slowly had become each one of those things the students had written. Took 2 years of every week counseling, but now she was at a good place. Today would be her graduation day from seeing the therapist. And she goes in and they begin to talk. And they're excited about the progress that Margaret has made. And then the counselor says, "Margaret, I have one last thing you need to do. It's going to be hard, but it's important. I want you to relive that day one last time. Tell me everything that happened. Everything each student did, the teacher did, what they wrote on the board." And so Margaret begins to tell it all again. And she's crying. And when she gets to the end, she made it through the end. And the tears are just flowing uncontrollably. Her head's down, just sobbing. And she hears this whisper, "Margaret, Margaret, Margaret." And she opens her eyes and she sees her counselor's eyes. And the counselor says to her, "Margaret, you're forgetting someone." And Margaret says, "No, I remember everything. I remember what everyone said, what everyone wrote. I'm not forgetting anything." She said, "No, Margaret, you are. There's somebody in the back of the class sitting. And that person's getting up now and walking forward. And this person gets up to Miss Garner and he takes the chalk from him and he grabs an eraser and he erases everything on the board. Do you recognize him, Margaret? Do you know who he is? It's Jesus. And he's standing at the board and he starts to write on the board, 'Margaret is loved. Margaret is beautiful. Margaret is gentle and kind. Margaret is strong and Margaret is brave and courageous.' And all these things he writes on the board." Margaret begins to cry again, but this time the tears are different. And there becomes laughter with them and their tears of joy. And Margaret realizes she is not locked into how these other people viewed her, but how Christ views her. And it was a moment of grace. Grace that would change Margaret's life. For us, too often we try to let other people influence how we look at ourselves. We're either trying to impress them with our piety, our good works, hiding those things we don't want to share. Or we're allowing them to put us down and hold us back by what they do and what they say. But we are a people of grace. And we are beloved children of God. And it doesn't matter how others view us. What matters is how Christ views us. And Christ loves you. And Christ wants the best for you. And Christ thinks you're beautiful and you're lovely and you're wonderful. And he shows that to us by the fact that he was willing to die for us. We are a people of grace. And therefore we need to offer grace to others, to build others up as opposed to pushing them down. So let us live lives of grace. Amen.